Thank you for downloading this podcast, the Fast Talkers podcast. It's our 23rd episode. We've got a great panel lined up for you because this is a Sim special. I'm Jenny Gow, your host. Our panel are waiting to go. And if you'd like to subscribe, please do look us up on YouTube. You know all the usual places and social media. And thank you so much for listening. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Fast Talkers, and this is a Sim special. Yes, I wanted to get down with the kids, which is always a little uncomfortable for me to do because I'm so old, and have a chat about, I suppose, the world that's moving faster than the actual racing world at the moment. So let me introduce, without further ado, our guests. Let's start with world's fastest gamer, British GT driver, James Baldwin. James, you're one of the people that has made the transition across, which is super exciting. We'll talk about that in a bit. But how are you? How's life in lockdown?
Thank you for the very warm welcome. I'm fine. Pretty bored. I think we all are. But yeah, cracking on. Just, yeah, there's plenty of stuff to do in the world of sim racing. So pretty busy.
It does seem like the world of sim racing has taken quite a lot of the space of lockdown, which I think is a great thing. It means higher exposure for you guys. It means more people trying it, getting an understanding of racing. And if you come in through sim racing, the hope is you stick around for real racing as well. Let's meet our next guest, who is Tia Buch. Hopefully I've pronounced that right. Tia, it's lovely to have you on, and a very sparkly background as well. I'm loving it.
Thanks. It was originally to be in the background of the stream, but I'm having a green screen in the end, so it's a bit pointless. But yeah, I use it for occasion like this.
That's very, very nice. I like it. Now, Tia, you are in London, but you have an accent. Just how did you make your way across from France to London?
I took the decision 10 years ago. It was mostly love, so it wasn't sim racing related or anything.
We like a love story. That's good. It's not all about the sim. Let's go to our final guest, who is Steve Alvarez Brown. You might know him as _SuperGT. He's a YouTuber. Everybody on here creates content and is very busy when it comes to the internet, I suppose. Steve, you've just kind of come off a mammoth sim session, 200 laps around the Nürburgring. Tell us more.
I've always been a bit of a sucker for these ridiculous endurance challenges, and I thought, about time I just did the most stupid thing in lockdown. There's loads of time to do it, so I did 200 laps of the Nürburgring Nordschleife. It took, I think, the total finishing time was 27 hours and 39 minutes, and I would recommend that no one ever tries it because it's absolutely horrible.
Tell us the highs and lows of your 200 laps.
Well, the highs would be finishing it, the final lap, and just getting out of the sim rig and going to get something to eat and sleeping. I've also, it was for charity, so we raised £25,000 for a Philippine school project. So that was the main thing, really, and I was happy to raise that amount.
That's amazing. Are people still able to donate if they want to?
Yes, always. A Philippine school project. You can always look it up on Google and always send over a donation.
Cool. Okay, thank you, all three of you. Let's get on and have a chat then, because this has been an exceptional time. Do you think, Tia, let's start with you, lockdown has changed the face of sim racing and esports?
First of all, there's more and more women, which is great to see. I can see a lot more in my community. I can see a lot being done around that. But yeah, there's so much more events happening all the time. I don't really know how I still manage to do so many things at the same time, because it's it's popping up everywhere.
Steve, how do you pick which events you do? Because as Tia said, there are so many now.
Yeah, there's so many on so many different games. Someone like James is really good on like every game, but I think most of us are like, we have one or two that we favour. So typically I'll just go with the ones that I feel most comfortable with, the ones that I don't have to put as much practice into. Because sometimes a lot of these events, for example, last year there was one on R-Factor 2, and it's a sim I haven't really played too much. And I was logging on, and it shows you the lap counts of people, the amount of laps that people have put in for practice. And some people are on 400-500 laps. So I thought, okay, this may be not the one for me. But you just have to go with what you feel comfortable with and what, you know, the game that you like the most, probably.
And James, as Steve says, I mean, you're very good at a lot of them. How many hours of practice are you putting in? What's your kind of routine? And I want to know your routines from all of you, if that's possible. We'll start with James.
You could say I'm good, but I'm also good at putting time aside to practice for all of the events. So as Steve said, prep is a massive part of it. I try to do as many as possible, especially in the first lockdown when there was like 6-7 events every week on F1, R-Factor, iRacing, all of them. And they are generally quite fun, especially racing huge names like Lando Norris and people like that in these races, which is pretty cool. But yeah, the lockdown period and COVID has fast-tracked sim racing by... it's tenfold. You know, I think Veloce Esports, they said to me when it first started, their business has been fast-tracked by like 2 years, which in this industry is a hell of a lot. So I suppose long may it continue, but hopefully we get back to some sort of normality in the near future.
So hours-wise, James, what sort of hours are you committing to practice?
I suppose the most outrageous number would probably be for F1 Esports. So the game came out in July. The first event was September. And I think I had 400 hours on the game, which in a couple of months is like, I don't even want to think about it, but it's like 6 hours a day or something like that. So yeah, a lot of hours, probably too much.
Wow. Okay. Tia, what about you? What's your schedule? How many hours do you plow into sim racing and YouTube?
Well, I wish I had put more hours into F1 2020 before I was asked to participate to the F1 Esports Virtual GP, because I think I had maybe 60 hours, which obviously if you count 6 hours a day, that I didn't do that at all. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed my team side of it. So I guess I enjoyed that a bit differently to what James is using it for. I am quite... Well, I like to use all the sims. So my favorite are ACC, AC, iRacing. So I try to focus on these. I guess my side of it is more of the content creation rather than just participating too much into the esport, because I've only been on the scene for a year now. But yeah, I want to participate to more events. Definitely, I was super, super honored to be part of the F1 Virtual GP. And that makes me want to be much better at it, maybe spend more time on it. So I've got more content that's going to be around that shortly. And because ACC is my main sim, I think it's great to see more and more events around that. The sim grid is doing awesome at this. And I want to be part of more and more event on this, yeah.
For me, YouTube is the main thing rather than being quick. A lot of the time actually is spent editing. You might be surprised that, you know, a video might be 20 minutes long. It might take 2 hours to record that. But then it might take 5 hours to edit. So a lot of the time is actually spent behind the scenes and you don't actually see all of that. That's probably the surprising thing that I think a lot of people would think, that you're just spending a lot of the time actually playing. But when you're creating content, so much of it, actually I'd say that 60% or more is actually not playing the game, actually doing other things, editing, getting a thumbnail just for the YouTube video can take half an hour sometimes if you want to get it dead right. So there's a lot more time in the background, and it's a full-time job, so many hours every day, sometimes late at night, sometimes early in the morning. It just, whenever it needs to be done, I just get it done.
It's a fascinating world, content creation. It's certainly one that has seen exponential growth over the last few years. James, does what Stephen says resonate with you? Are you spending lots of hours playing, but actually a lot more doing all the other things to support what is your career now?
I think you've got to have like a hand in, you know, a commercial side of it as well, because ultimately you need money to live, and we're not F1 drivers, so we're not getting paid, you know, lots of money to race. So I think it's always good to expand yourself to these different social platforms like YouTube, Twitch, to interact with people, because there's no point winning things or doing well in things if no one else is watching it or caring So Veloce Esports kind of showed me that side of it. And yeah, I mean, it's going well. I mean, I'm nowhere near the level of Steve, for example, but the problem is with me, I don't feel like I'm a very creative person. So creating a video is difficult. Whereas I see like Steve and Arava and people like that, they're really creative. So it's hard.
Trying to draw on skills that you maybe didn't realise at the beginning you'd have to draw on sort to of. Make it such a success.
Just winging it, yeah. Completely winging it.
Tell me, kit-wise, what have you got? Steve, let's start with you. What's your setup? What have you got? What makes life good for you?
I've got my own sort of standalone rig that I'm sitting in here. I don't know if you can't really see it. So I've got like a Simlab P1 chassis, which is like it's a very strong framework, which holds it all together. And then like the direct drive wheel, one of the strongest. You get a lot of feedback through it. So a very strong, delicate wheel. But to be honest, there's so much here. There's almost too much to talk about because I've got like this audio mixer, I've got PC. So I'm constantly investing in the setup, audio, the camera, the rig itself, the wheel, the seat, everything. So it doesn't get cheap, let's put it that way, if you're constantly investing in like the best equipment to stay on top of the wheel and how to play the game, but also how to create the content and get the best quality in the microphone and the camera.
I guess I'm lucky in that way that I'm a Thrustmaster partner. So I've got their best TLCM pedals. I can show you quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Right next to me.
Text on a tour.
So here you've got the TLCM pedals, RS6 rig, which is basically this whole frame. It's absolutely awesome. I've got a button box because when playing Sims, and especially if you're playing a variety of Sims, you need quite a lot of controls. So you need a lot of buttons, and most wheels haven't got enough buttons on there for you to use all the controls. I've got the TSPC racer from Thrustmaster. And yeah, I've got all the streamer bits to the side, maybe not as good as Steve. I've got a Blue Bowl, I've got a fairly cheap microphone. I'm on a budget, so I've got the camera and everything that I could find the cheapest, the best value, but still giving away some good content on YouTube. So yeah, that's my setup.
And James, what about you? Because I suppose when it comes to the angle, we can see quite a lot going on in the background. Tell us more.
This rig here is like my favourite rig. So it's got, like Steve, a direct drive wheel, a nice cube controls rim, some proper pedals, a big widescreen monitor, which you can see you all on, which is good. And that's what I use for the majority of games in Sims. So, and to be fair, I mean, as Steve said, I'm constantly investing, constantly working on it, trying to invest in better equipment because ultimately if you pay for more, you do tend to get more back. So, I think when I first got a rig, it was like 200, 300 quid. But now you could say it's probably worth, in total, over 10 grand. It's constantly going up. So, yeah.
And there's me with like a little halo and my iPhone.
Nice.
I'm keeping it real.
Yeah.
I'm the Emanuele Pirro of broadcasting. I just rock up with the basic equipment and get the job done.
I mean, it's what you don't need the expensive equipment. Don't get me wrong. You know, it's just when it is your everyday job, you want to, you know, you want to take some pride in it, I suppose. You want to have the best to be the best, if you know what I mean.
And tell me, the community, what's the gaming community like?
It's definitely got bigger. I think the first lockdown, so March, April last year, there was a massive rise in just the attention on sim racing. I mean, my own videos did so much better during that time frame. You could see a lot more people getting into it. I think a lot of that was down to the F1 esports, where you had Charles Leclerc, Lando, Albon and George Russell. Those four especially were really driving a lot of attention towards sim racing. So it's getting bigger, like James was saying. It's just getting fast-tracked. It's just moving so much quicker than it would have done otherwise without the lockdown. So there is an actual upside to this lockdown. Not that I'd prefer there wasn't a lockdown, but if there is an upside, it's that, more people are watching and sim racing is getting bigger. So that's a good thing.
You've got to take the little things in life at the moment and celebrate them. Now, we do have lots of kind of news in the motorsport world that I wanted to chat to you guys about, because actually, yes, you're sim racers, you're YouTubers, but you're also, you know, into motorsport. And the first one is Lewis Hamilton, because he's finally signed a contract. And James, you know what it's like to be driving on a track as well as a sim racer. You've done both. Were you surprised just how long it took for that contract to actually be done?
No, because, like, I think someone said to me, it resonated with me quite well, is he's in his, like, legacy part of his career. So he's achieved what he wanted to achieve. He doesn't have to do any more. He's going to be regarded as one of the best, or maybe the best, regardless. So, to be fair, I wouldn't have been that surprised if he retired. So I didn't know what to expect. Obviously, it's 1 year, so it took a long time to, I suppose, the negotiations were quite in depth. But, you know, I think the most likely outcome from now is he does a year and then probably wins it and then retires. I was pretty sure he wasn't going to do like another 3 year contract or anything like that. So, yeah, I suppose the negotiations just took a long time because it's coming to the end.
There weren't any other seats available. That Mercedes seat was the only seat going. So it was going to go to him or, I don't know, no, well, George Russell, but he's signed at Williams. So he could take his time on that, really. It didn't really actually matter. I'm not surprised it's 1 year. I think that Hamilton would want to get that eighth title and then retire as the most statistically successful driver. And I wouldn't be surprised, actually, beyond that, to not see him race anything ever again. Just
I was going to say that, yeah.
I don't think he'll race again in anything.
No,
he'll just retire and that's it. He's done.
That's what I was going to say. When he retires, I don't think he'll do GT racing, you know, sports cars, anything like that. I think he'll just knock it on the head. I think he's not bored of it. But if he retires and never races anything ever again, he can't lose. He's always going to be revered as the winner.
He can only go downhill. His reputation, retiring when he's winning as the most successful driver, he can just stop and never do it again. Like, yeah, I was the best ever. Can't. And then his reputation can't go downhill if he does nothing.
Exactly.
I think he's had quite a few passion projects throughout his career. And I think that, like James said, he's reached the peak of his career. So maybe another year doesn't surprise me, and maybe he will want to focus on other passion projects that he had through. I know he's been involved in music before, and I think in Extreme E. So yeah, he might want to be involved more in the background of things rather than just being at the forefront and racing.
I don't see him being one of those people that comes back as a pundit and hangs around the paddock and kind of wants to know what's going on, kind of like a Nico Rosberg person. I absolutely agree. Once he's done, it's probably done. Fernando Alonso has been in the news as well. Sounds like he had a cycling accident. He's reportedly broken his jaw, had an operation to relocate it. A Spanish media reporting that it all happened last night. So not the ideal preparation for what is an older person going back into Formula One. Do injuries ever bother you? I can imagine that an RSI actually would be something awesome, especially after 200 laps. Steve, do you suffer from anything like that ever? Not a broken jaw.
Yeah, luckily I didn't break my jaw. But to be honest, I turned my force feedback on the wheel all the way down to zero almost. So my arms actually felt completely fine. It was just my legs. I just stood up and I just had it felt like I cycled for 10 hours. There was no strength. Yeah, not ideal for Fernando. It's only, a month away, or just over a month away from the start of the season. So not ideal preparation for him, but, you know, he's a fighter. I'm sure that he'll hopefully be able to recover in time. And the main problem for him is that he won't be able to train whilst he's recovering. So that'll be a bit of a problem, but hopefully he'll be fine for the first race.
I always remember when I was covering MotoGP, Jorge Lorenzo broke his legs, but came back anyway. It was like a was it a 40-day recovery or something crazy? Valentino Rossi did something similar, came back after his fracture. The resilience of a sports person always astounds me, Tia. It's kind of like they have superhuman levels. And of course, they've got the best people around them. They've got, you know, hyperbaric compression. They can go into chambers and train in different ways. But they're pretty impressive.
You know, I was going to say, they obviously have the best physio around them and things like that. So, and also, we kind of forget because they're racing driver, but these guys are athletes. They do a lot of training, you know. I think, especially with F1, we've seen more and more all the trainings they do in the gym, which is related to the G-force they're experiencing on their body. And so I've tried their neck exercise just for a laugh in the gym, and I couldn't believe how hard it was just to exercise my neck. So, I think he's going to come back on force. He's clearly a fighter, so I'm really not worried. I think he's going to be great for our team.
It's not the first time as well, if you think about it, with Fernando, that he's had something, you know, that's ruined his pre-season. I don't know when it was, like 5 years ago or something. He had that crash at Barcelona where the car electrocuted him or something, and that was quite serious. So in that sense, he's not used to it, but it's not the first time for him. I think the majority of stories where a driver comes back as an older statesman or an elder statesman and they're making a return into the sport don't tend to go too well. But I think with Fernando, it probably will, because I just think he's like that Hamilton level of driver. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see. I think he'll have the edge on Ocon as well.
Do you think it's good for the sport that someone like Alonso is coming back rather than new people coming through to you?
I think it's important because he has a legacy behind him. And I think the Alpine team really needs someone like him. And I think he could be great for Ocon, actually. He might learn a lot from him, being his teammate. So it's a bit of a shame that some newer driver won't get a seat, but I think they will get their seat in time. So no, in the end, I think it's not that that much of a problem.
It would be great to have him fighting for titles at the front, because I always felt with like Kimi Raikkonen in Alpha that it was a seat wasted. As much as I love Raikkonen, he was the driver I always supported, like when he was at McLaren. But I don't know, I always feel like it'd be nice to get a newer, younger driver in there. But what I would love to see is if Alpine now, managed to hopefully with the new regulations sort their car out and fight at the front. It'd be great to see Alonso at the front fighting for a title. I think that would be like a great headline. It would be great for the sport. But him, if Alpine are mid-table, I don't know. I don't think it'll be that great for the sport if he's just sat there in the middle. So hopefully Alpine can, you know, start fighting for race wins. We don't know though.
We have a minefield this year with so many name changes, tweaks. The first few races are going to be a mess as we plunder our way through a litany of mistakes, but we'll try and get there for everybody. We really will. Portimao also has been signed off, so it looks like that will be the TBC that was on the calendar at the beginning of May, I think it was. James, you're our Portimao expert. We've named you that because I've never been there and nobody else has driven it, and you've kind of simmed it. So tell us, Portimao, good thing to have it back on the calendar?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good track, especially in quali with the elevation changes and stuff. Really, really cool. I don't think I had the best race in terms of entertainment last year. I know the first lap was pretty mental when it started to rain. But yeah, I think out of all the tracks on the calendar, it's certainly in the top half. So good to see it back. Really enjoy watching quali around there.
It's certainly one of the tracks that I really enjoyed watching last season. And that, for me, the fascination of last season was the fact that F1 was going to these different tracks and it was kind of mixing things up. And whilst it looks like they've got the craziest calendar ever for this year, trying to do every single track in the world, it feels like, I think we're going to revert back to some of those older tracks. Tia, have you got one track last year or a track that you would love to see added to the calendar? Is there any track in the world that you go, oh, I love that track?
I think that's a really tough question because I basically started following motorsport around a year ago. So I don't think I know enough track to be answering that. But I really enjoyed the fact that Imola was back on the calendar. So I would like to see a bit more Imola, yeah, going forward.
Yeah, Imola's beautiful for so many reasons. I think everybody still thinks about Ayrton Senna when you talk about it. So, it resonates with people. James, favourite track that you've either driven, you've sim raced at, or you'd just love to see on the calendar?
Suzuka, 100%. It's just an awesome track. I'd love to go there one day in reality, even just to be there, let alone drive on it. The best tracks are the best in quali, but they don't tend to be the best in the race because you just can't overtake because they usually have the longest sweeping corners, not many heavy braking zones. Most tracks we go to now and we see F1 and they're like, they can't overtake and we blame the track. I don't really think it's a track problem. I think it's more of a car problem because you see F2 and F3, the majority of tracks, the racing's really good. So I think hopefully 2022 with the new reg change should... make a lot of tracks, you know, back to good racing, hopefully.
A lot of my favourite tracks are probably all the fake ones that they make in the video games. Just be as crazy
Rainbow
as they
Road.
Like. Yeah, Rainbow Road. But I think last season was a really good season, actually, because of all the chopping and changing, weird, different tracks. Obviously, in terms of the title battle, there wasn't one, really. We knew that Hamilton was going to win it, but if you looked at every race on their own, every race was, or most of them were really exciting, really interesting. I like Turkey. I think that was a really good race. I'm struggling to think of a track, though.
Nordschleife.
Yeah. To be honest, it'd be interesting. I mean, they wouldn't be able to overtake. Be an interesting show, I think.
I think the drivers would definitely be up for that. And we just had an update. I know this is kind of a programme that you might be watching after the event, but just had an update from the Alpine F1 team saying that Fernando Alonso is in hospital in Switzerland. He'll be under observation for the next 48 hours. His fractures his upper jaw and they've conducted a successful corrective operation. Looking forward to a few days of complete rest and then he will be able to progressively resume training. They say we expect him to be fully operational to undertake preparation for the season. Good luck to Fernando Alonso. I think we have to say get well soon. Let's round this off because this is about you guys. This is about content creators. This is about sim races. Where do you see the future going, James? What does it look like in your mind? What are your hopes and aspirations? And I know that's a really sucky question to ask because I don't think you're going to be on track this year, are you?
No, not as it stands at the moment. I think the industry as a whole, where's it going to be? 5 years' time, nobody knows, if they're honest. I think it's going to be better off than it is now. It's going to constantly grow, as gaming is as a whole. I mean, me personally, I'm not in the car this year. It's not the end, though. I'm pretty sure if I can put things in place, I can be back on a grid next year onwards. That's the goal, as well as, you know, still competing in esports and not losing touch with it. And, you know, there's lots of young talent coming through as well, like there is in Formula One. So still trying to beat them is my goal as well. So not let the kids dethrone the older guys just yet. But and obviously grow the content side of things as well.
I think it's just going to keep growing at the moment. And especially because we're very uncertain of what's going to happen in the next few years. I think this virus has actually... influence the way we live, and it might influence the way we live in the next few years. So I think for now, it's just going to keep growing. Drivers will slowly turn towards that to keep their mental and their racecraft going. So yeah, I think it's going to keep growing, and I don't see a problem with it because for me, it's more that and content creation rather than just the actual motorsport racing. I do miss. I've had my first experience going to Brands Hatch, seeing the historical racing this year, and that was absolutely awesome. And I'd like to see more of that. But I absolutely love the fact that this virus has actually been a great way to promote further the esports side of things.
You said right at the beginning of this show that actually you have seen more people, more girls getting involved, more women getting involved as well. Is that something that's important to you?
it's a big community online that we've got. And I think it's important for everyone that's new and also any woman that would want to start to feel welcome. And it's, if you walk into a room and there's 100 men around you, you might think, okay, I'm not in the right place. And I think the more women we see, the less we'll think that way. So yeah, it's very important to see more and more women. And I think because obviously so we've got the W Series driver that I've been talking to some of them, Sarah Moore, her sister's also racing in real life. And they both turned themselves towards ACC and other simulator. And actually they weren't that comfortable with it. So they asked us what to do. They had some training around that. And I think it's great because actually, the fact that COVID came around, people, we see more women, but real life racer, because there are a few of them out there. So yeah, it's been great, and I can't wait to see more and more coming in.
And Steve, the future for you, obviously things have been positive in lockdown. Where do you see this going for yourself?
In terms of YouTube, I've been doing it for many years, but it's just a continuation. Just hope that the growth continues. Hope that the videos are still being watched over the coming years. There's room for me to perhaps step into real cars as well, or into real motorsport. I mean, I have done karting since I was 10, so I've done that a lot, but sort of blurring the lines between virtual and real would be great, to be able to sort of mix the pair of them.
I'll just say quickly, right, when I was karting as a kid, Steve was the guy. Like, he was the guy before he had a YouTube channel and anything like that. Everyone's like, in my little group, everyone, you know, we knew the name Steve Brown because he was always at the front. So I think, I know Jimmy Broadbent's obviously going into the real world from sim racing, but if Steve did the same thing, I think it could be really cool.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get onto the real life racing. And like you say, Jimmy, a great example of someone who doesn't really have much real life experience, but he's started off in the sim and he's going into real racing. So it shows you that it can be done. So hopefully that'll be a great thing in the future. And I think that in terms of like the esports of racing, perhaps it hasn't reached the stage yet where, you know, like Fortnite or Call of Duty, in terms of viewership or the prize money and the interest. So hopefully in a couple of years, we can get to that stage where much more investment and much more viewership as well.
Do you want to pack out arenas? Do you want that sort of notoriety and fame?
Fortnite is filling up stadiums and giving out 3.5 million for the winner. Like, if we can get to that sort of level, then even, you know, giving people a drive in a real car. I mean, James has had that kind of prize, you know, from a gaming, well, is a mixed competition, wasn't it, of virtual and virtual and real. But you know, there's so much potential in esports. So hopefully it goes in the right direction.
I think the key is with the esports, if they want to get to that level, they need to find a way to make it just that little bit more entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
I think once they crack that, then it'll be fine.
I think in many ways, it's sometimes you don't want the virtual to be exactly like the real.
Yeah.
They're trying to copy it, but in many ways, like, the virtual can actually go off and do its own thing and be entertaining in ridiculous ways. Like, we're looking at the sprint races in Formula One to try to spice it up. In virtual, you could just do that. You can just do whatever you want, whatever format you like, just to make it interesting and a good watch.
I think it's a really great moment in time with lockdown. As you say, one thing that seems to shine out is your careers, your notoriety and your success, which is good stuff. We need a little bit of smiling and a little bit of happiness in the world. To James, to Tia, to Steve, thank you for your time. Fingers crossed this year will be really successful for you. Stay safe and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you.